Well, welcome back to the official Scottish Rugby podcast. Just Al Kellick and I tonight, as he's currently on mute shouting at his family to tell him to keep the noise down from home. Al, you've been caught, you've been busted. How are you this evening? Are you all right?
I'm all right. There could be some noise in the background. Kids are in running riot. Puppies barking at something. So, yeah, but other than that, I'm good.
All good. Well, as I say, just you and I tonight. You caught up with Rachel a bit earlier on to talk about one or two of the things around the women's game. And we're going to be delighted to be joined by Chris Harris from the national squad a wee bit later on. But firstly, we'll have a look back to the two Guinness Pro 14 fixtures.
Well, you better start by just telling us what actually happened in the game, because, I mean, anybody who watched that on telly, the fog came in, and it came in thick. I mean, I heard you comment a couple of times on safety as well, but we're good to go.
Yeah, it was the Edinburgh Cardiff game, wasn't it? VT Murrayfield, and it was actually really quite thick before the game, the fog, and there was a worry because we were there quite early, as you do, to prepare and get set up. And we were there before the floodlights went on, and the TV director, the producer, were a wee bit worried about what it looks like when the lights go on. But the actual fog lifted. It was okay. The first half was fine. And then almost immediately after a half-time whistle, the fog came down again. And there was periods of the game. I know we'll talk about the game as best we can shortly, but there's periods of it where you couldn't see a thing. Whether you were trying to commentate from the monitor or look up and, you know, from the west stand, you couldn't see the pitch. It must have been, well, it obviously was easier on the field. You could see, I think, obviously next year, but there's no way you could see the backfield, or if the ball was up in the air, I would find it really difficult. We did say, you know, the TMO got in touch with the referee and fed back to the match producer and directors that, listen, it's fine. There's no issue with safety on the field. The Andrew Brace, the referee, you know, was aware of everything, but it was there was issues for the TV crew, put it that way, and for the viewers. But great win, that aside, brilliant win for Edinburgh. Really needed it. 18-0, clean sheet, as I say, was really important. But to back up last week's win away in Llanelli with a win against Cardiff was much needed. And did you see any of it at all?
So I saw some of it, but generally, the second half you talked about in the telly, it was incredibly hard to follow, other than your top quality commentary. I mean, you'd be as well listening to the radio at times. I shared a few messages with Henry Burgess last night, who picked up player of the match. Was that picked by you?
It was, yes.
Yeah, and he was commenting that actually it was challenging at times, because I jokingly said, did you know where you were passing the ball? But he said it was challenging at times, but obviously dealt with it better than
you mentioned the radio commentary. I feel for those guys, because they were looking over our shoulders, looking for the TV monitors to have an idea of what they were trying to commentate on. And the row in front of us, or a couple of rows in front of us, was the print media. So they had, you know, no idea for a lot of it what was happening. So it was a challenge. I think before we kind of dive into the game, the other thing I thought of, well, real positive from the evening, was how many young players were bloodied and exposed to winning in the professional jersey. Couple of them, Sam Grahamslaw and Dan Gamble, getting their first ever involvement. Conor Boyle got his second involvement off the bench. And Chamberlain did well. There's quite a few guys, but I thought, actually, if that's your first ever involvement, how do you prove you were playing? You know, you want to send the video or the footage to your mum or your dad, I got my first game, or prove it. And you're like, well, I can't. Nobody can be there. If you weren't there, you couldn't see it. And the video will be as good as no good. So you could either say you got a hat trick and run rings around everybody, but yeah, no proof.
The video analysis session, it would either be today or it'll be tomorrow.
That's the other thing I was thinking about when I was driving home last night. You can't review it, but also imagine the analysts who are trying to code it. So obviously, when you code a game, every instance for each player. Tackles, clear outs, rucks, first person rucks, second person ruck, kicks, you name it, everything in minute detail is done and assigned, what you did is assigned to you. So effectively you click on your name and you can evaluate your own performance really quickly, and you know the scrums are clipped together, the liners are clipped together. The poor folks doing the analysis, I assume they were told, listen, don't bother, because, well, certainly second half, because it was as bad as I've seen it, to be honest.
I remember when that all first came in, and you'd have people arguing about tackles that they either get given as a miss or they think they'd made more. Last night's game, you could have said what you want.
I know, exactly. Exactly. I'm saying it still happens.
Oh, does it?
It still happens. If you, some of the players that go up and one missed tackle, I never missed a tackle. But then there was a system miss and there was a technical miss, wasn't there?
Yeah, there was.
So you could have a system miss, which meant you were slightly in the wrong place, or you were slightly a little bit too wide or too narrow. So you didn't actually get near the tackle, but because you broke the system effectively, it was a missed tackle. Or there was a technical missed tackle where you were either bumped off or didn't make a strong enough wrap, or your technique wasn't good. And then remember when they brought on the offload mist? It used to kill me as a fullback. You were covering the whole width of the park. You would run across, try your best, make a last ditch, try saving the tackle, and just as the person tackled managed to offload the ball inside, it would go down as a missed tackle.
This is taking me back, because they used to have the continuous tackle count as well, and all the backs used to complain that they had so much more space to defend in, and all the front five just had to hit the guys who were running around the corner.
Quite right. But it was a positive, absolutely, last night. Edinburgh, I thought the composure, the physicality was excellent. The composure, the control from 9 and 10. I thought Ali Miller played really well in the back row. I thought Magnus played well in the back row. Dave Cherry had another cracking game. Hooker, he started the game. He scored a try. He made a big impact off the bench last week. Good all-round, much-needed win. Two wins from five, so it's two wins in a row from Edinburgh. Cardiff defended bravely, defended well, but their attack didn't threaten really that terribly. They had a lot of kind of unforced errors, or forced errors from Edinburgh's good defence, but I think, pleasing night for Edinburgh players and Edinburgh coaches to continue winning around. And they play Leinster away next week, so that's going to get a step up and challenge. But to expose some young players, for some of the more experienced players to lead and guide, I think from what you saw of it, I think you'll agree that Richard Cockmell and Edinburgh will be happy with the backing up the two wins in a row.
Yeah, you shouldn't underestimate the clean sheet, as you describe it, as well. Like, from a defensive point of view, clearly. But as far as, knowing that your systems work, knowing that the effort you're putting in is working as well, that's a big statement to make. And it gathers you a little bit more momentum than just the win would ordinarily. I almost texted you beforehand saying, you watch the Edinburgh game and I'll watch the Glasgow game, knowing that we were coming on today, and then I realised you were working the Edinburgh game, so you didn't have any choice. But knowing you as I do, have you managed to catch up on the Glasgow game yet?
Yeah, I've been through it today, yes. Been through it today, so it's a disappointing result. When you saw, I got a text actually as I was working, it said 7-0 to Glasgow. Immediately I thought, great. And then yeah, by the time I got to half time, I think, what was it? Was it 24? 15 or something, or 24, yeah, 15 at the time. And I thought, no, not so good. But there was a large element. I went through it quite closely this afternoon. There was a lot of elements that were fairly solid in terms of, I thought, the start and the end. The bit in between wasn't great, but there was elements that I thought were actually quite good. Where I thought Glasgow were really disappointed is the tries they conceded. Some of the defence was excellent, as it was against Leinster last week, but the tries they conceded were poor tries to concede. I think five of the six would be within two phases, or maybe three phases. So that it's difficult. The initial hit has to be better. The fight to stay in the tackle and try and slow possession ball down. Now, it's hard at Ravenhill or Kingspan, because I've always described Ulster as a dynamic team. They've got that physicality, but it's quick. Someone like a Munster will have that physicality, but traditionally it's like slower. So it is hard to slow the possession down, but there'll be probably system errors in that. If we're going back to defence analysis we're talking about earlier, there'll be system errors that allowed Ulster the space to get in behind Glasgow, and then you're scrambling after that. So disappointing from that perspective. But
I think from watching it, the biggest disappointing factor was it was quite similar to the week before. Started well, got himself into the game, looked really dangerous. I thought Sean Kennedy throughout the whole game actually played well, and he was threatening and he was sniping. But Ulster just controlled that middle third and slightly beyond. And big statements when they're kicking to the corner. And it's a way now, you kick to the corner, but when the clock's red to take a scrum in front of the post, right in front of the post at half-time, again, is a big statement. And I think what Glasgow need to work hard on is making teams very reluctant to take that decision, because they're actually thinking, we're probably coming out of this with nothing. And the game, and it sounds a silly thing to say, but the game was lost from the periods that Glasgow had to defend under 22, because every time Ulster came in the 22, they came away with points, or just about every time, and they came away a lot of the time with the tries, with the 7 points, because they were, that's all they were seeking, it's all they were going after. And, but the try just before half time, you mentioned system errors. You know, when you get that close to your line, it has to just be about defending that line. And you know, guys folding early and putting pressure on guys coming around the corner, it means that there are gaps there. And like Cooney's exceptional, but Glasgow just need to concentrate on being a bit harder, a bit grittier, especially. And they'll know this. I'm not saying anything they wouldn't know in that 22. So that, I mean, scoring 15 points away from home again isn't that bad. Danny Wilson talked about it at Galway when they went to play Connacht. Like, the attack going forward is pretty good. They've just got to make sure that they tighten up in defence.
Yeah. A couple of those tries are driving mauls as well, line at mauls, which, if you take it a step back, it's the penalty usually allows the opposition to kick to the corner to set up the maul, you know, 5-6 metres out. Difficult to stop when they get going. But again, well, is that a technical thing? Is that, I mean, there's so many different ways of trying to stop a maul. You could get up and try and win the ball, you know, before the maul gets started in the line out, or you stay in the deck and you go hard. There's more technique involved in that than just sheer grunt, isn't there? Or is it equal amounts of both?
It's probably a bit of both, and there's different ways. As you say, like Glasgow, they got a penalty. Just as Ulster were trying to exit by being quite smart in the maul defence, and the penalty, maybe they actually just got a turnover, they got a scrum because Ulster hadn't transferred the ball, or had transferred the ball, and Nigel Owens called them up on it. I think that if teams are getting 5 metres, 10 metres out and getting these driving mauls to tries, you need to look at different ways of doing it. There's some exceptionally good maul defence players in that group, like Robert Harley, we've talked about in the podcast before. Like, his ability within that maul is great, and he's always just on the edge. You know, I think that it's the, as I say, the willingness for teams to go at it at the moment, because they've got that confidence that they'll come away with something. Glasgow need to get away from that so that Ulster think twice about the decisions they're making.
Ulster are on fire as well, though. I mean, they really have been one of the form teams. Obviously reached the final last year. Look to have started from where they left off and more so far this year. And it's a tough place. Not many teams will go there and win, especially with a team missing as many internationals and many, you know, senior players as Glasgow. But there'll be, as you say, positives from the way they started, the attitude, the aggression, the grunt, and the fight towards the end to dig in. You know, a lot of young players again and less experienced players getting their first taste of their early taste of what it's like. And that's the goal, I think, for Glasgow over the next 2 or 3 weeks. The game next week's obviously postponed due to the Dragons. They're due to play the Dragons at home, but the Dragons are on a 14-day quarantine, so it's another really 2 weeks for Danny and the coaches to really work at these young players and upskill them and prepare them for the games that come up afterwards. Well, Al, we're delighted to be joined now by a member of the Scotland camp, Chris Harris. We're delighted to join you from, you're at Orium with the lads, obviously training all week preparing for the game against Italy on Sunday. So thanks for your time. I know that this is Tuesday, we're recording on Tuesday. Tuesday's a big day in the training field, isn't it? Time to put your feet up now.
It was a big day out. Big old day out. Boys are tired, but we've got plenty of downtime. No one's going home, so we'll have a day off tomorrow and we'll be ready to go.
So was it double rugby on a Tuesday, or is it rugby and weights?
Sort of. There was rugby this morning, weights this afternoon, and a bit of skills. But just low key, so not Chris, quite so, doing, not proper double day.
Were you doing any mauling? Chris Moshe and I were just talking about
apparently I don't need to practice the mauls anymore. Apparently I'm 100%, I think.
Oh, fine, there you go.
Made a difference in the Leslie, Al. Get a 13 in the back of the maul.
That's it. You boys, that's the thing we've been missing for years, is just getting more of the backs involved. We're just commenting on that.
To be honest, I don't think I would have added much weight to a maul.
Chuck you guys up in the line out soon enough as well.
Have you ever, on that note, I remember once having on a yellow card, having a scrum in the back row for some reason. Somebody obviously says, I think it was in the wing, they were, oh, come in. What? As if I'm going to make a difference. I'm sure I've seen you in the back of the scrum, Chris, have you? Yellow card. You would be my go-to back to get in to help the big fellas out.
I'd be keen to get involved. I don't know if I have or not. I definitely will have at sort of A-League stuff back in the day, but I don't think sort of in the Prem or anything like that. But can't do as bad a job as Johnny May did when he linked up onto the edge of that scrum.
Do you remember that? I was just thinking about Andy Henderson as well. You remember Andy Henderson well, Mossy, and he got put in the Glasgow game, and for whatever reason, Johnny Beattie decided he would move him from flanker, just, you know, get in there, push charge of can to number 8. And again, Andy Henderson didn't know what he was doing. The ball got hooked back straight between his legs, and I can't remember who we were playing. It might have been Ulster, picked the ball up and scored. And it was like, guys, we've got to be a wee bit sensible where we put these backs. I'm not used to being in here.
I know. Well, let's say, building up to the game, we'll talk about the game in Italy, in Florence, in a wee while. But just before that, give us a flavour of, I suppose, your background. You grew up in Carlisle. You played most of your rugby in and around Carlisle before going to study in Newcastle. So what, was it all rugby union, or was there a rugby league mix? Or
when I was younger, I did sort of back-to-back seasons, both in Carlisle, played for Carlisle RFC.
Oh, yeah.
When I was 11, I think it was, I started. And then when I got to 15, I went, or even younger, 14, I was doing rugby league in the summer as well. And that was for Carlisle St. Jude's. And I did that back-to-back until I was 18. Yeah, about 18. And then that's when I went to uni. But I was still coming back. I loved Carlisle rugby. I was still coming back in the first 2 years of uni. They pay me my petrol money. Even though I got a lift, so I had some beer money for the weekend.
You can't say that; they'll be after it back.
No, I think they knew. I think they knew. So yeah, I went to uni for a couple of years. I played for Carlisle. I tried to play for uni and only played sort of fourth and third team. I think I had one run out with the twos, and then went back down to the thirds. So I was just like, this just isn't for me. So I played for Tynedale. And I did Tynedale for a couple of years before Newcastle picked me up, and then that's when it all sort of started. But rugby professionally wasn't really a thing for me until Falcons came in. I was just doing it for the crack, really.
Were any of the Grahams involved at Carlisle, or was that?
Yeah. There was a few Grahams. Gary and Gaz were both playing with me.
Yeah.
George would help out with a bit of coaching. And then the young boys were all coming through playing youth group. So I know that family very well.
Thought you'd got away from it and then picked back up
in next minute here he is, come from Jersey, playing at Newcastle, and then he got capped for Scotland as well, which is class for him. He had an interesting route, but we weren't talking.
He had an interesting route. Moss and I both played with his dad, which is aging us massively.
Yeah. It was class to be there for his debut, man. It was quite a good moment.
And obviously, it was Newcastle where you start to play professionally. So, how did it feel? You obviously said professional rugby wasn't really in the mix, and then it comes along. Is it seen as I'm going to give this absolutely everything for as long as it exists, or was it forward planning, looking to progress, obviously international honours, or just in the moment almost?
Nah, it was international. When I first started at Newcastle, international wasn't on the cards. It was literally just, I'm just playing rugby. The previous time I was at Carlisle, I went to Tynedale, I went to Newcastle. They were all sort of big step ups for me.
Yeah.
So it was just focusing on Newcastle and trying to get in that team. And then it wasn't really until got the call from Scotland when I was like, oh, hang on a minute, I can potentially be in with a shout here. And then you just sort of still just focus on your game at Newcastle, and then the rest of it look after itself.
And what year are we in, Chris, when you turned pro at Newcastle?
So that's a good question. When did I finish uni? 2013. So I was in at Newcastle in 2013-14, would have been my first academy, like a senior academy year.
Yeah.
But that was still, I was still dual registered at Tynedale. Mm-hmm. So like we literally go in for the whole season. We'd all hold the pads, get run into, stand behind the sticks and watch the boys running through the plays. And then on the evenings, on the Tuesday, Thursday evenings, we'd go down to Tynedale and play for Tynedale. So I did that for a season. And then then I was on loan at Rotherham. So this is 14, 15. I went on a, like a, I think it was still classed as a dual registry, but it was a loan at Rotherham. So I played with them for sort of half a season, I think. And then I was coming back up and down for the European stuff with Newcastle, which is where my senior debut was, which was against Bucharest Wolves in that European Challenge Cup.
And a bit of a Scottish contingent then at Newcastle.
Say it again.
You'd had Ali Hogg and Scotty Lawson.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
Scott McLeod.
Mike Blair.
Phil Godman.
Phil Godders, yeah. Was that about it? It was the right crew.
And then it was only really, was your the debut for Scotland for 2017?
Yeah, November.
So there's only like, a 2-year window from that almost uncertainty. So tell us about the kind of journey there. What was it? Was it skill development, or was it just growing and getting more confidence, or was it development in your physique? Because it is a meteoric rise, really, from being in and around Tynedale to international rugby.
Yeah, it's probably a bit of everything, really. You sort of chucked in the deep end, aren't you? And you just kind of have to learn pretty quick. I'm quite skinny anyway, but I was very skinny and lanky back then when I first started out. So yeah, I needed to sort of put more of a physique on, and I don't know. It's just, I think just playing more regularly and getting your confidence up, and just sort of like when I was younger, I just didn't really think about the outcome, and I was just playing rugby just for the enjoyment. And I think that's kind of what got my confidence up and got me playing more regularly.
That's good. And really. And since then, we've won 20 caps already, been involved heavily in the World Cup. More to come, obviously, starting this weekend in Italy. But what are the highlights from international career so far? You've scored 3 tries, you've played in some amazing victories. What are the ones that so far kind of jump out and stick out to you?
Debut aside, because obviously that was like a special moment. My favorite part of being involved is definitely just that the bus ride in to Murrayfield when it's packed. It's just unbelievable. Like, I'm not just saying that. It is actually class when you get off the bus and the fans are all above you and the cheering and that. That's like a moment that gets me every time. Yeah. And that's one of the biggest misses with having no crowds.
You're not going to get any argument here. Like, you're making me smile just from remembering back. But it's an incredible special moment when that bus comes in and it goes slow, doesn't it, from the front gates, and you're looking around at everybody, Piper's leading.
I'm getting goosebumps now thinking about it, and the bagpipes in front and stuff. Oh,
yeah,
it's amazing like on the field in these gladiatorial arenas and all the highs and the lows and the expression on the field. It's a moment off the field that really sticks. It's really powerful.
It's ridiculous. Like, the whole ride in, the fans are just cute. Like, they're just in crowds just cheering you through. Second to that, if not on par, is the anthem. When in the second verse, when the music stops, and I almost just don't want to sing the second verse because you just want to listen to the crowd, and the crowd just pelt it back at you. That's like, those are two like unbelievable moments which I really do miss over this COVID malarkey.
Oh, you've got me going. You've got me going. I'm I'm nostalgic. You know what I mean? Those are the two.
That's what I'll miss, I think, most when it does come to an end. The rugby side of things, apart from my debut. One of my favourite moments was just being selected for that World Cup squad. That was just like, for me, that was just like a big achievement, and I was like delighted. I was over the moon. I was just wasn't really expecting it, to be honest. Going into the camp initially, I was just like, wasn't really sure where I stood, and I just like just left everything that I could on the training field every day and sort of tried to play the best game that I've ever played. For Scotland when I got my opportunity. But then when I got named in the squad, like, oh, I was delighted, man.
No, you deserve it, because it was a long campaign, wasn't it? All the pre-season build-up, and there's so much pressure surrounding it, and I suppose a little bit different in Al and I's day, less was scrutinised. Like, everything, every almost minute, every session filmed, it's reviewed, And I suppose maybe there's a pressure that if I make a mistake in training on a Monday, it may affect my chances 3 weeks down the line. So you have to be on point the whole time. So that release is understandable at the moment of selection.
That's the thing. But then, everyone else is in this, well, a lot of other people in a similar boat, and everyone's sort of pushing standards. So like everyone's just getting better and better, and it gets harder and harder. So, but yeah, that's definitely one that sticks in my mind.
The latest victory a couple of weeks ago away in Wales, obviously no crowd, first time for 18 years. I said, you know, that they, I thought the performance was quite, we said before, it was almost a controlled performance, nullified Wales entirely. But that win on the road, that feeling, none of us had it as often as we'd like, but that in an international jersey must have been special as well.
That was special. The thing is, I never felt like we were going to lose.
Yeah.
It's weird. Like even when we were down up by a point or whatever it was, I just never felt like we were going to lose that. So like boys' confidence was up. Maybe it wasn't like the flashiest of games, but we did what we needed to do. And then when the final whistle went, when we got that penalty, when was it Jamie Richard that got the turnover?
Yeah.
That whole like D set leading up to that turnover, everyone was just like getting. It was a great feeling. And then Hoggy slotted it, and that was it. It was a bit weird not to celebrate with a load of fans, but it was still good.
I've gone back and had a look at that. Do you see where Hoggy's ball landed? Obviously, it was really windy. We spent an hour and a half talking about the wind and commentary and how hard it was. Hoggy's penalty actually cleared the top of the stand. I was just laughing at myself. But yeah, absolutely smashed it. Not only through the posts, but actually carried the back of the stand into the car park. I was like, make them miss it.
Get it, dead.
Even if I'm missing, it's getting off the pitch.
I was lying down holding the ball, so I didn't really. I just had my head down.
You were lucky with Hoggy, he could have caught you near. Before we talk about the Italy game, Christian, the Autumn Nations Cup to come, a bit of insight into camp and probably more a bit of insight into you as well in that camp, because it's a time you talked about earlier on. There's so much good downtime. You'll be spending more time together over this period of games than you ever would have before. Where do you fit in? Are you the one jumping out of cupboard, scaring people, sitting in a corner reading your book, or somewhere in between?
Probably in between, to be fair. It's a weird one, man. Like, it's not much you can do. You just kind of like, there isn't like a lot of boys are into the PlayStation. I'm trying to be that guy, but I'm awful.
What are they playing? It used to be Call of Duty and FIFA.
It's still that. It's like Warzone. Battle Royale.
Still playing Fortnite, are they?
The Call of Duty version of that.
Oh, it's old school.
Fortnite.
no cards. No, nobody playing cards.
That's one thing that probably needs to get more of, to be fair. A bit of cards. I'm trying to teach myself how to play the guitar, which in my ears is going really well. Played a little tune for my girlfriend, and she was just like, "What are you? This sounds awful." I was like, "What? Are you not hearing it?"
Could she guess the tune if you played it? Could she recognise it?
Because it's been the same tune I've been trying to learn for ages. So she knows what's coming.
She knows. She knows the answer.
That needs to go on to your social. That needs to be a guess the tune competition now.
Guess the tune. There you go.
Get it on now.
Christ, it'll be difficult. But apart from that, there's a golf simulator that's just been put in that we were promised 4 weeks ago. So that's good. There'll be a big queue for that on the day off tomorrow.
So you won't have, you've got obviously downtime tomorrow and then travel Thursday, game Saturday. So you'll be, and then back, I think, immediately after the game Saturday. It's a 12:45 kickoff as well, an early kickoff. I saw that. I was like, it's like being kind of back at school, get up early, get out of the way. It's better than the 9 o'clock kickoffs in France, I think. Get out of the way early.
I rate the early kickoffs. Just get up and at it.
Yeah, exactly. Get on
about. What about the pre-match meal though, Chris? But you've got to get two meals in, so you'll be up at 6 to eat your breakfast, and then 3 hours before the game, 2.5, what's your pre-match meal? Are you going to be eating spaghetti bolognese at
Depends what's on offer.
That was the strangest part for me of the early kickoffs, was the fact that you were eating spag bowls.
I just tend to just try and have a big day the day before. Just get all my fuel on the day before, and then it's sort of topping up in the morning, and then a little snack before the game.
Chris, I think I'm going to take the same attitude and fuel up on Friday ahead of your game on Saturday.
Pizza, pasta, let's go.
Exactly. So what do you expect from Italy? You'll have done an analysis. They were kind of changing the game a little bit against England, wasn't it? I think that the kind of rearranged Six Nations game, England was it 34-5, I think they won, but England kind of didn't show much either. But Italy were, as they often are, gnarly, tough in defence, but probably kicked a bit more, probably played a little less rugby than they had than earlier on.
Yeah, so that's the big thing. They seem to have kicked it a lot more in their last two games they've played.
Yeah,
they seem to have just kicked it a lot more, so just need to be aware of that, really. They'll still have a go and fling it around, and they'll like to sort of offload and keep that ball moving. But I think we just have to be aware that they are going to kick it a lot. But we've got back three boys that'll mop that up, and they'll have a field there. What else? They seem to be pretty aggressive as well in defence. They seem to be coming up a little bit harder. So that'll be a challenge as well.
That's something, a new position, your footwork and your skill set, it's an opportunity as well, isn't it? If you spy these defenders coming to line and getting through, and that'll be an opportunity, I think, for the midfield.
Completely. I think we've just got to sort of tighten up our attack a little bit and sort of go at them, almost fight fire with fire, just run hard into the spaces that they are leaving. And you'll be able to just sort of short passes or just move that point of contact, and we'll definitely break them down. But what else about Italy? They've obviously got some quality individuals. My mate Jake from Gloucester, he's
some ball carrier, isn't he? Yeah. Jake Pelledri. How does he do it? I've very seldom seen him being tackled by the first defender. Like his ball carrier is ridiculous, and he's not a massive man, is he?
Nah, he's just dense and powerful. I thought it must be a unit, and I went to the gym, watched him in the gym, and honestly, I was like, wait, I'm lifting more than this geezer. Why am I bumping everyone? He's just one of them that's just a freak on the pitch, an absolute freak. But yeah, man, like they're a good outfit, and they can score just from any sort of turnover as well. They're very lively. So from a defence perspective, we've just got to be on it. And I think our attack will look after itself.
Well, getting off to a good start will be important. Obviously, there's France the following Sunday, and then Fiji are the three games in the Open Nations Cup before the finals weekend. So getting off to a good start is important. And I'm sure with the preparation and the science and the knowledge in the camp from the recent game over there with a 17-0 victory and the experience you picked from that, the win in Wales will all stand in good stead. So we wish you luck and hope it goes well.
Thank you very much.
Let us know when the music, the guitar playing up, so we can...
Yeah, maybe the next one I can give you a little name rendition. That
tune. Name that
we'll
tune.
Have a game on, we'll have a game against the tune on here.
Right, Al, as I say, great to get the insight from the camp, but a bit of a character Chris has. A lot of the supporters probably don't know him particularly well, but just refreshing to hear. Honestly, great to hear his journey from kind of amateur rugby, really, and the desire and the love for rugby right through his international performances so far. And he does, he comes across as a bit of a character, well respected within the squad, and you can see why.
Yeah, hard working guy. Obviously, the journey he's been through as well, he's done it slightly different way, which is brilliant. And he's had a few characters with him along the way, including George Graham and the boys. But yeah, I think he's, as you say, very well respected because of that work ethic that he brings. So, thanks for him the weekend.
He said it himself that he brings 100% to every session, and I'm lucky enough to be at quite a few of these sessions and working with individuals. And it's true. I mean, he's somebody that he doesn't leave anything out, which can in our day would frustrate people. He hits hard. Even when it's touch, he'll stop dead. He's getting his processes right. So from a defensive point of view, say, even if you're just touched, you want to be in a good position. You want to make sure your feet are in close, your shoulders in. So if it was a game, you know, that execution there is good. And if he's hitting a line at an attacking ball, he's hitting it hard, he's hitting it real. So it's, he says it himself, he brings 100% to every session. He gets massive respect for that. But it was nice to hear him being quite laid back and quite personal, really. And some of his memories and his highlights, when you mention the fans and the, it's amazing. He just, maybe I'm wrong in assuming this, but you think when you ask players highlights, the first thing they would go to is on the field or a moment or a try or a win. But brilliant to hear the support that he feels from the fans.
I thought, yeah, absolutely brilliant. And I wonder whether what they're going through at the moment highlights that, because actually it's not until you get to,
you don't have it,
you don't have it, and you generally don't have it when you retire. So we look back on moments that we miss. It might be different to what you actually thought of at the time.
Yeah, but
these guys are going through the similar things now. They don't have that interaction with the fans pre-game. They don't have the atmosphere that's generated from the anthem. And all of a sudden, it makes them realise they're missing it massively. So when it comes back, they're going to be even more special, those moments.
So obviously, the team was announced earlier in the week, and Doohan Van der Merwe comes in. On the wing, big impact off the bench against Wales. But there's depth in that back three with Stuart Hogg, Darcy Graham, Doohan. We've said it before, Blair's on the bench. And with four games in four weekends, part of that's potentially management of players and getting everybody sharper. But and Doohan will be delighted to get himself in a starting position and cause a bit of damage, a ball in hand again.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, he's a guy that comes looking for work. There will be opportunities against the Italians that will be unstructured at times, the way they play the game as well. So,
kicking tap, like Chris mentioned before as well, if they're kicking more.
Yeah, exactly. So, yeah, we'll get the opportunity to run the ball back. I'm not sure how many times we'll kick the ball to him. Maybe once and then change our mind. But yeah, I mean, he's, like we've talked about it already, his form for Edinburgh has been incredible. Gregor, I'm sure I read, described him as one of the best attacking players in the world. So excited to see what he does.
And changing the midfield as well, obviously the injuries at a standoff, and Duncan Weir deserves an opportunity, comes in Duncan at 10, Sam Johnson back at 12 after a couple of games for Glasgow. So a new midfield partnership to work alongside Chris Harris. And again, just underlining the quality and the depth that we kind of seem to have as a luxury now.
Yeah. Delighted on a personal point of view to see Dunkey in there. Like he's an incredibly likeable guy. He came in as a young fella when I was at Glasgow. He sat in behind two exceptional players in Finn Russell and Adam Hastings. So really unfortunate for them with the news of the injuries. But an opportunity for Dunk to step up. And you know, Sammy playing outside him will mean that he's got the, you know, Sam's a great distributor as well. We've seen that in games in the past, and I think it'll suit Chris. Like, it'll give him the ability to run those short lines at a rushing defence and hopefully take them on.
And Stuart McAnally back at hooker as well. As I say, another example, I mean, the three areas of the field we've picked out, back three, that 10-12 access and hooker, just depth in there. But again, Fraser was outstanding against Georgia, and Stuart did really well coming off the bench in Wales, so to have those two there, and George Turner in the squad as well, it's just, as I say, going back to that four games in 4 weeks, we're going to need all these players, and it's good to know that whoever starts, you have a lot of confidence in.
Yeah, and slightly, I suppose Gregor's ability to pick the team that suits the opposition as well. I know that at no stage are you picking a team that's going to have any, you know, any drop off in it at all. And some of the key positions that you talk about there, the fact it's very, very difficult to choose who would make the starting 15. That starting 15, as we've seen from Gregor in the past, will change depending on the opposition. And you'll pick the best player to play against them. So Stuart McAnally gets another opportunity. As you say, his impact off the bench against Wales was fantastic. And now he's got an opportunity to start and try and hang on to that jersey. So no Rachel on tonight, she's training, but I did manage to catch up with her earlier on, Mossy, just with the announcement that the Six Nations wouldn't be completed and that the World Cup qualifying games that were due to go out to be played in December have been postponed. Now the positive news is I chatted to Rachel about was the fact that World Rugby have postponed those games and are looking for a date in 2021 to try and make sure that the girls get the opportunity to qualify on the park, which can only be a good thing.
Yeah, absolutely. Obviously, the Six Nations are won't be replayed, and that's understandable in terms of the travel restrictions and all the restrictions on that, and also because there was a known winner. England had won the Grand Slam, so it was, you know, it was top to tail there. So, and the other thing about that is the Six Nations isn't that long before next year's Six Nations. You know, if it stays in the same window as it is at the moment, it isn't really that long for the women to wait for the next one. But the World Cup qualifiers would have been in that, you know, ended November 1st, kind of weeks in December. So we have to fit those in. I mean, without knowing too much about it, you'd imagine some of the games in the Six Nations would double up, potentially maybe against Ireland and Italy as Six Nations games and World Cup qualifiers. But I think it's just, we've said it time and time again, it's just difficult. I think there's only been one test in about 9 months for women, and it was, you know, the draw against France. And what they really wanted to do and prove they were on the right lines was back that performance up, and they're going to have to wait a little bit longer for it. But I spoke to Brian Eason, the coach, earlier on in the week, and he has already planned what the, you know, the sessions will look like, where they'll train remotely and the different regions, and also when they come together in camps later on in the year. So they'll be well prepared, and there may be any more, as I can say, more riding on the fixtures when they do come along, because they'll carry double weight in terms of Six Nations potentially and World Cup. But that just adds to the excitement, and it just doesn't really change how you play. It just means you focus your mind and you're as detailed and accurate as possible when you do get the opportunity.
Yeah, that, to your point about the France game, at least they're going away, albeit they'll be disappointed because there's so much focus on these games, and Rachel touched on that, but they're going away off the back of a good result. We keep talking about it as if it was a win. It was a draw, but it was a great draw against a team that's ranked fourth in the world. So they've got that extra motivating factor as well, to know that the last time they were out there doing it, they did it well.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and that'll give you confidence, but then you have to look ahead as well. You know, it's sometimes a dangerous game if you look back, and if that thing you're looking back at gets further and further in the past, then it becomes less and less relevant in some ways, because players will pick up injuries potentially, or there'll be long-term injured players who missed that game who are now fit by the time you play again, that come into the reckoning, come into the squad. So the planning and the training, the preparation and the camps and the hard work that goes on between now and then becomes really, really important. But off the back of that excellent performance against France gives them, you know, the belief that will, when they're asked to play, eventually they can deliver. So let's hope it's not too long before we get to back up that performance.
No, absolutely. Now we've got a huge weekend of rugby ahead, first from an international point of view and from a club point of view. It will give you an opportunity to again take in seven or eight games in a weekend, which I know you'll be looking forward to.
Loads of rugby this weekend, Al. Loads of rugby every weekend. Well, it's not just weekends now; it's through the week
Monday
as well.
Monday night games.
It does throw you. It does throw you for the week, though. And you think, you can feel as if that was a Thursday, it was a Friday, and you know, you're prepping on different days, and it's a bit strange. But that's the world we're living at the moment, isn't it?
Well, as I said, Mossy, I managed to catch up with Rachel earlier on, who gave us her insight into the news about both the Six Nations and the World Cup qualifiers either been off or postponed. So, Rach, disappointing news around the upcoming fixtures for you guys. Not only the Six Nations games, which have been cancelled now, but the postponement of the World Cup qualifier. Although within the release, it's talking about dates in 2021 to try and make sure that you guys can earn the right on the park, and that has to be a positive and amongst the negatives, is it not?
Yeah, hopefully we will get the opportunity to go out and kind of settle it on the pitch, like you say. It's super disappointing, and I think, you know, with the previous postponements and cancellations, there was always a little bit of a something to look forward to next. And, you know, with this one, it's a little bit different in that, you know, the games have been cancelled for the Six Nations, which is really disappointing. And I think it was a bit of a bigger blow for the girls than some of the previous ones. But, you know, what we've gone through in the past, like, 7 months as a squad means that we will bounce back. It might just take a bit longer this time. But, you know, we're having all the conversations amongst the group to kind of do what we can to psychologically and probably more than anything, be in a place to kind of look forward. Obviously, the last like 4 years has all been geared towards these games, so it's a bit of a blow. But like you say, there is a little bit of light at the end of the tunnel in that they are looking to reschedule them for the new year. And for me, I think they absolutely have to. I don't think for the women's game it is, you know, a choice not to reschedule these games. I think we have almost a year until the Women's World Cup to get, you know, the qualifications sorted. And I appreciate it is a busy schedule, but, you know, it's already very difficult to qualify for the Women's World Cup. There's only 12 teams go compared to the 20 that go to the Men's World Cup. And the four teams which are fighting out for these spots that we were supposed to have the games for in December are all top 12 teams. So to not even give those teams an opportunity to play out to potentially be at the World Cup is really damaging for the women's game, but also for, you know, a big thing for us is inspiring the next generation, and these games would give us a massive platform to do that and kind of grow the game within each of the countries. And I'm sure, you know, Ireland, Spain, Italy all feel the same. So I really do hope next year we get the opportunity to play and settle on the pitch.
Definitely. And I think, you know, everybody else would echo those sentiments that, you know, ultimately, as you say, there's been a huge build-up to these games. So you're going to be disappointed. How have you guys dealt with it so far? Have you been able to come together collectively as a group and have these conversations?
Yeah, we haven't come together collectively. So we've really only quite recently got the news, if I'm honest. So we've had a team Zoom when we obviously found out the outcome of this decision. And then kind of we've touched base individually in small groups and stuff like that to kind of check in with people to check everyone's all right more than anything. But I think the next step will be, you know, we'll come together as a players group and just kind of come back together and start to look forward and get our heads around the decision. And like you say, there is a little bit of hope, and probably coming out a little bit doom and gloom, but there is a little bit of hope, and I think that's what we've really got to focus on. And, you know, as a squad, we've got an incredible attitude in terms of just like getting on with things and get back to work. So I think that is very much going to be the message, as we just get back to work. And this is an opportunity in terms of we have hopefully got a good few months ahead of us to prepare and come even stronger into those games in the new year.
I think that's exactly the right attitude, isn't it? And your own leadership and your leadership team will have a big role to play as far as refocusing, isn't it? When you get that initial disappointment, it's refocusing on the difficulty is it's refocusing on uncertainty. But the world at the moment, unfortunately, is full of uncertainty. But look, Richard, we very much hope you get the opportunity to get back in the park. I know you can't join us for the wider podcast. Your training, I believe. Yes. I remember those days not all that well. But thanks for catching up.
No worries. Cheers.
Well, thanks once again for listening. Hope you enjoyed it. Just Al and I hope not put you to sleep. Great to catch up with Chris Harris here from Rachel. And we look forward to joining you all next time.
Support Scotland this season as one. Scottish Rugby has introduced a new membership for fans at home and abroad to back the sport in Scotland during the COVID-19 pandemic. Sign up for Scotland now at scottishrugby.org.